What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Titan. I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have an industry veteran who has created a foundation for many up-and-coming and seasoned drummers and has recorded with some of the biggest artists and bands in the music industry. From Herbie Hancock to Bob James, George Benson, he still is drummer percussionist for the smooth jazz group 4Play. Please put your hands together and welcome drummer percussionist, producer, and songwriter Harvey Mason Sr. What's happening, Harvey?
Spud, how are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good, man.
Great. Great to be on here. It's great, man.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show, Harvey, man. You know, I've been a follower of your drums for a while, man, and, you know, the tracks that you've been laying for everybody, and especially with the group 4Play, man. It's just really a true honor to have you here.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and 4Play's been going on 20 years now.
Oh, man, 4Play, that's just my group, man. You know, 4Play is one of my top five groups, top bands of all time. And, you know, I'm going to date you a little bit, you know, just because you guys just have so many timeless tracks, man. But one of my favorite songs you guys did, man, was 101 Eastbound.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Nathan East song.
Yeah, that's a hot track, man.
So try and keep them coming.
Man, you guys got a new CD release titled Let's Touch the Sky.
And yes, that's all. 13th.
Wow. Man, it's an astonishing career you guys had together as a band. You know, another timeless CD on my head. I had a chance to listen to it, and there's a couple of hits on there automatically, man. And one particular, man, you guys did a remake of Teddy Pendergrass Loves TKO.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. That was very natural with Ruben Studdard, you know?
Oh, yeah, the vocalist, man, he just really killed it. And, you know, just the overall band production together. One of my faves on the album.
Oh, man, well, I'm glad you like that. Ruben's a very cool guy, and Nate called him, and he said, man, are you kidding? And he was on a plane in a day or two.
Wow.
Jumped right up. We cut a track, and he jumped right on it.
You know, how did the group 4Play start, man? Who was the mastermind behind the whole project in the group?
Well, it's funny, because Bob and I go back 30 years, and we were friends, and Bob's records were primarily all recorded in New York. And this one project, he decided to come out to L.A. and record with me out here, even though I'd been going back there. So he, not knowing anyone in New York, he asked me to put together a couple bands for him, you know. So I put together two bands for him. One of the bands had Nathan East and Lee in the band, and that's the band he really liked. So we ended up doing the entire record, Grand Piano Canyon. And while we were making the record, the chemistry was so cool, Bob said, guys, would any of you like to be in a band, or would all of you be in a band? And everyone said yes. So he went back to Mo Austin at Warner Brothers. He was a vice president there at the time, and told him about it, and Mo signed us immediately. Next week we had a contract. Wow. A couple weeks later, Mo was at the studio for the first day of the recording, and the rest is history. We recorded After the Dance with El DeBarge, the record was platinum, and 4Play was born.
Wow.
We also, when we recorded, we said we did not want to make this a one-time deal. We wanted to emulate the modern jazz quartet and be around for a long time, you know. And that's what we've been trying to do. We've, of course, had guitar player defections.
Right.
But we've come to know that things happen for a reason. And they've been very timely in that Lee left early. And Larry came aboard and stayed aboard with us 13 years, and now Larry's left, and now we have new blood, and it feels like a new band all over again. But we're very excited, because Chuck's a great composer, he's a great arranger, and he's a great producer. So we've strengthened the band, and the band is on fire. The new record is one of the best we've ever made, I believe, and I think it's going to do well. I think all fans will be very, very happy.
I agree with you. You know, Chuck Lowe, man, like you said, it's just another a virtuoso on the guitar, man. He's just phenomenal as a guitarist. I'm also a huge fan of his work. And, you know, you can't go wrong with Nathan East and Bob James, man. Bob James is one of my heroes as a keyboardist. Being a keyboardist myself, man, you just can't help but to take your hats off to him and just stare in awe when he plays, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a pretty amazing musician. He's a resident genius. He's amazing.
He is. Now, Harvey, you started out as a session drummer. I know you moved from Boston to L.A., man, and, you know, you started recording early with a lot of heavy hitters, man, like Herbie Hancock off of the Headhunters album, man. And, you know, how was that experience, man, then working with Earth, Wind & Fire and just really building your resume as a player?
To tell you the truth, that's what I aspired to do when I was my senior year of high school. So I went to New England Conservatory to shore up all my reading and musical experience, because I've been playing orchestrally as well as playing R&B and pop and whatever, and Latin music. And when I graduated, I moved right out to L.A. and began recording immediately. I mean, if I just, you know, was doing a lot of... Before I worked with Herbie, I'd done all the Blue Notes, the records with Donald Byrd and all those things, which were all gold records. And so that was the beginning of the fusion era, and then Herbie heard me and heard about me and called me to make a record with him, because he'd been making records languishing in the jazz thing and not really selling a lot of records, and he wanted to get in that span where he sold some records. So knowing that I had been in that arena and knew what was going on, he called me, and we spent about 3 months together putting together a record, working, and I wrote one, co-wrote a song and arranged another, and the record turned out to be a platinum record again.
Wow.
I did not go on the road, though, because I was, you know, a studio player. I just wanted to work with as many people, and that was my passion in life, and that's what I was doing, so I didn't go on the road. I worked on this record, but I just continued to record with everyone that I could.
Right.
And that did that for many, many years. We started Foreplay, and it sort of subsided a little bit when we started Foreplay, but it continues, but not nearly to the extent that it was, because, first of all, there isn't as much recording going on now. And everything's pretty much electronic, you know.
Yeah, things have definitely changed within, I would say, 15, 10 years. You know, the way we tracked back in the old days of analog. You know, I started out as an analog recording tracking, too, you know, where there were no sequencers when I started out also. You know, everything was real-time recording on tape. You know, now we're into a DAW world of recording. So, yeah, I could just see the transitions and the way things are changing, you know, nowadays.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty natural the way things move, so. But for me, it was amazing. Now, I never stopped to look back and see what I did or wasn't doing. But with the advent of the Internet, everything's compiled in so many records, and I look back now, and I'm just saying, this is amazing. I'm not sure anybody's going to be able to compile that many artists to work with in a career because of the way things are done and so many musicians, the way things are recorded now. So
right.
It'd be pretty hard to match that record, I think.
No, I agree with you.
I'm pretty proud of it.
Oh, you should be, man. Like I say, just the guys who you work with, Herbie for one, I mean, the name speaks for itself. Say no more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Harvey, give me some of your musical influences as a musician and also as an artist, you know, who you just really look up to as a drummer or even outside of, you know, being a drummer percussionist. I mean, who are some of the heavy hitters that you really listen to really cultivate your style as a drummer?
Well, I think my style is a culmination of I played in drum and bugle corps, I played in marching bands, I played in R&B bands, I played in bar mitzvahs, I studied Latin music, and I think it's all of that together as opposed to any one drummer. But when I was growing up, I started listening to a drummer named Art Taylor, who played a lot of the jazz records, and he was really a great timekeeper, and he was very musical, and I don't think he was not a household name. But I really appreciated what he did and the fact that he played with so many people. And I looked up to him, and I heard Roy Haynes, and then I heard Buddy Rich and Willie Belson, and then eventually I heard Elvin. And then when I heard Tony, the light bulb went off. I really loved that, and I wanted to replace him in Miles' band. And I just fell in love with Miles' music. But those are the drummers that I listened to primarily, and also Pistol with the Motown, you know, I listened to those guys and Jabu with James Brown. So I listened to all kinds of drummers, but I never tried to copy anyone. And my style just sort of grew out of a necessity of what I need to do to get things done in the studio and playing with different people.
Right.
And I was very fortunate. So that's how it came about.
You know, I think it's cool as musicians, man. You know, there's so many guys that we can really pull from. And, you know, like you said, you don't want to copy them, you know, but there's little bitty attributes that you can take from it, kind of implement it to your own style of playing. And because you're merging so many different artists and different musicians into your style, I mean, I really think it'll kind of set you apart from a lot of other guys who are just really focusing on one guy that they listen to, you know.
Yeah, I think also I was fortunate enough to, if I saw or heard something that I really liked, when I tried to play it, I might not play it exactly like the other guy, and I was happy with the fact that I adapted it right away to the way I played. It was just a little knack that I had. I never tried to copy anyone precisely. It might lead me in a direction to start exploring in another direction, but I never tried to copy their licks. And it always came out sounding different, so that was pretty fortunate. I really do believe that all the musical experiences I had really influenced my style, you know?
Right, definitely. Now, your musical influences also rubbed off on your son, Harvey Mason Jr., who I'm also a huge fan of, man, with his production with the Underdogs, man. So
he was with me from the beginning and learning to write, and was always writing songs. And he's a very talented writer and producer, and he's done really well for himself. I'm really proud of him.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Harvey, you're coming from an analog world of recording. I mean, that's how you started out, and that's where I started and ended up moving into the DAW world of recording. Give me your pros and cons of analog versus DAW and what you're currently using now to track your albums and some of the other artists that you may be producing outside of 4Play.
Well, I started, of course, in the analog world, but it's quickly forgotten now. Everything just moves, and you just kind of transcend. You just sort of just move, and you just... whatever's available and there's things moving along, you just kind of take advantage of it. Recording now is so much easier. What I liked about the analog was that it sort of put pressure on you to really get it done and make things pretty play at a certain level. I think now you don't have to play at a certain level because you can move everything, you can fix everything. You put this, you paste it, copy, you paste, you cut. So you can play two good bars and the record's done.
Sure.
So that's something that I think is true today, and it makes it a lot easier. What's happened, I think, with sequencing and everything, it's led a lot of people that might not have had the opportunity to get into music before because they may not have been as proficient in the game, you know, even as far as sequencing and all that sort of thing.
Sure.
And it's allowed people to get in if they're patient enough, they can get stuff done. So it's in essence influencing music because there's been a lot of fresh approaches that normally, technically, proficient musicians might not have come upon. So I think it's just opened up the game a little bit. And I use Pro Tools, you know, exclusively.
Sure.
Of course, I use Logic to sequence all the time. But when you record nowadays, if you don't use Pro Tools, you're setting yourself up with a lot of problems.
It is. You definitely got to have the experience of both formats. You know what I mean? I started out in Studio Vision Pro on a Mac. Merged over to Cubase and eventually moving over to Pro Tools for about 5 years. And then when Logic Pro really hit the scene, I mean, that's when I just really dove into Logic and just really took off from there. But it's just kind of nice now because if there is a Pro Tools session I receive, I can usually just upload in a Logic manner, you know, vice versa. So, you know, the file exchange and the importing and exporting of the file sessions is a lot more user-friendly than it was years ago.
Oh, yes. Everything's interchangeable now. But,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm a Logic guy, but I get the files from Pro Tools and they go back and forth, and it's so easy. Now you can also do a lot of recording. Last project I did, I used a keyboard player and arranger in Hawaii.
Wow.
You know how that works. You upload files and back and forth. And Harvey just told me he recorded a string orchestra in Czechoslovakia on a record. He watched it on Skype and he had his comments and... he had like 40 strings or something in Czechoslovakia.
Wow, amazing.
So things have really changed.
It has. You know, it makes, as producers, you know, when you got a lot of projects lined up, you know, the speed of the technology, the way we can run our sessions, you can run maybe 2-3 sessions at once, you know what I mean? And from different locations, you know, just flying sessions back and forth across the internet. I mean, that's just, who would have thought that 15 years ago? That's unheard of. Like, internet, what are you talking about, man?
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's really opened music up as well because now a lot more people have the ability to be heard, you know, right?
Yeah.
Before, radio stations limited, and they programmed what they wanted people to hear.
Definitely.
Consequently, their programming now doesn't really affect sales because you can be all over the radio and still not sell a lot of records nowadays, especially in the smooth jazz area.
Right.
So people are going to the internet, and I think pretty soon that's going to be it. There aren't as many major record labels anymore. I think with this one major label now, artists are going to be doing very well, and independent labels and independent artists can have their own labels. And I think it's great because people are now finding out how to find music on the internet, and there's a lot of music on the internet and all over the place. So I think it's a renaissance period for music, and I'm excited about the future.
I am too. I was one of the guys, man, 10, 15 years ago, planning for the independent of, you know, promoting and really running and maintaining your own production and your artists and really putting out your own projects without the help of, you know, other labels. You know, now it's, you really got to get into the promotion, really learn some different aspects of the business, but I think you need the best of both worlds. You know, you're a great musician also, but to really have your marketing and promotion team and your tactics on, I mean, that's really where it's at these days with the internet, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a great time.
You know, I talked to a couple other drummers, Harvey, and, you know, I like asking everybody, man, what they like running in on their signal chain for their drums and certain mics. Are you a sure SM57 fan, or are there any particular mics?
They're still there. I'm not that particular about it. I leave a lot of that to the engineer, but the SM57 has been used for 40 years.
Right.
Still used, but there are a lot of new microphones now that have replaced a lot of the old microphones, and there are a lot of different mics that are being used. So I don't, if it doesn't sound right, I'll mention it, but I leave a lot of that to the engineers.
Definitely. Right. You
know. But I can tell you, the 57 is still used a lot. It's amazing. It's a real workhorse.
It's a nice mic. It doesn't add a lot of color to it. I mean, it just kind of gives you what's there, you know, in this livest form. And it doesn't require a lot of EQing and shaping. It's just really good signal mic. And I think that's why it just stays in the chain of studios for, like you say, 40 years, man.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, the object of engineers generally in the past has been to record the sound that was there. But in recent years, guys have ideas about the sounds they want. So they're trying to manufacture sounds. And so there's a lot of tweaking and altering of drums with EQ and limiting and compression and everything. So
sure.
What you hear in the room is not what you're necessarily going to hear on the record anymore. So it's all manipulated now.
You know, for song structure and arrangements, you know, give me some of the steps that you've done over the years of your recording experience. You know, the beginning steps to building a foundation for a new song, and also the process it takes when you receive songs from other artists that they would like for you to produce for their albums. Are there any specific methods that you apply still?
Well, first of all, you have to have a good song. And I just use regular song form as far as putting it together. But, you know, it's an instinctual, there's an instinct involved. I try not to, there's formulas that you use, but I try not to it depends on the song, you know, what the song form is. But what goes on the song, what's recorded on the song, it's just a matter of what you hear. You know, it's not like you have a song, you have to put strings, you got to put guitar, you got to put this. Each song is special, and each song sort of dictates what should be on it. And it kind of, you just hear it. You can just hear it. But the song is in direction, I need some of this, I need some of that, I need some of that. So generally I have a song, I'll listen to the song and think of that song with the artist, and then we'll just cut the track. And I think about what the tempo that I want the song in, and how the words lay, and actually cut the track. You think about all the colors that you want to put on. I usually cut the track pretty basically. But the way things are now, I can end up on the computer and just add, so it almost sounds like a record when I cut the track, you know.
Right.
But most often now I've been creating tracks with Logic and then overdubbing musicians, live musicians, if I'm going to use them. But it all depends on the song, depends on the artist, the mood, depends on what you're trying to do. So there's no real rule that I can say that I apply to doing that.
Sure. You know, for finding that creative zone, though, Harvey, I mean, do you find that in the studio or performing live with your bandmates and feeding off the energy from the audience?
In both situations, I find it, of course, in the studio, because I've been so long in the studio, and I love the challenge of being able to come up with something on the spot, something that you just heard and you didn't take time to rehearse, you learned it right there. And I love that challenge of doing that, and also I love the challenge of being in front of people and creating that magic and people seeing it, and they know it.
Yeah.
Foreplay plays the song, they hit a melody, but then all of a sudden they see us take that journey, and they really love that, and I love that feeling of doing that.
Yeah, the improv.
The improv is so very, very cool, and it's so special that I love just nothing like that, and especially to share it with people and audiences that really get it. That's so very cool. So I've been doing more of that live and with Foreplay, and I'm really happy I've come to that point in my career, because it's not as much recording, and I really get it, you know.
Definitely.
I get to play Chuck Lowe a few years with Larry, so it's a journey, and it's magical, and it's fun.
Wow. You know, as a keyboard player, you know, I'm still a fan of playing remakes. You know, this one I'm just kind of zoning out and just practicing my chops. You know, is there any songs that you haven't had a chance to record that you would love to tackle and really make it your own?
That's a good question, and I can't off the top of my head say that there is. I can't. From time to time I'll hear a song, I say, I'd love to record that song. So, but I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there are a lot of great songs that I probably would love to record someday.
Right.
With Foreplay, we get the opportunity to do that, but we often will play a cover on a song that we really like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we did TK on this new record, we'll find a song that we really like and we'll cover it. Some things you don't want to mess with.
Right. Something rather classics. It's like a forbidden, man. I got you.
Right. You're just not going to do it in a significant way to make any kind of real difference. So you just must leave it alone.
Right. Right. Just be a fan of it, man.
Right. So you have to be very careful you pick those covers for it.
You know, we're approaching, man, the closing of 2010 and then getting into the 2011, man. What's on the musical agenda? I know we got the new CD with Foreplay out, man. Is there anything outside of the projects of Foreplay that you're working on currently?
Well, I put together a band called the Chameleon Band, which is basically a description of me and my career. And we created a lot of the music that came from that era, and I took the band to Japan. And it was Patrice Rush and Jimmy Haslip, Bill Summers, who was in the original band, and Azar Lawrence.
Wow.
And we played a lot of that music, and it was the Japanese audiences are so amazing. I go there with Foreplay, and then I go back with my own bands, and I've gone back with trios, and this time I took this configuration back, and they just come out in droves, and they love it, you know. It's 800 people a night. I'm there for a week, and it's jammed, and they appreciate all this music. So now I'm so excited about it. I'm trying to write and prepare to do a record. CD. Prepare to make a CD here and try and tour the United States and Europe. See if get the same response from the audiences here.
Nice.
So I've been working on that. Last week I worked with my son on a new movie, a Tyler Perry movie of colored girls that contemplated suicide or something like that. So we worked on a track with Sir Harvey with that. And we go, of course, with the band, we're moving forward. And I have a live record that I recorded with Gonzalo Rubalcaba and Dave Carfin that I've been editing for I don't know how long, that I just can't wait to get out the trio record.
Wow.
So I have a lot of things going on, and I produced a record for Japan that just came out. We did all the Michael Jackson songs, kind of quasi-jazz. Her name is Chirito. It's a very, very good record. And I'm working on a production vocals for a girl from Bosnia named Zana. And I'm producing her records. As a matter of fact, I'm working with her tonight as well, all this week. And that's four plays. We're going to Shanghai on the 9th. And we'll come back, and we'll be touring the States on the 16th. Then we're going to back to Japan in December. We'll play with the Tokyo Symphony, Foreplay and the Tokyo Symphony, which should be amazing. We're orchestrating a lot of 10 songs to play with the Symphony Orchestra. We'll have a quartet segment, then we'll have the orchestra segment, and I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. And
so that's going to fill out the year.
Man, you're a busy man.
Oh, you got to keep it going. I mean, that's what keeps it interesting.
It does. You know, always, man, when you're in the music zone, for me anyways, anytime I tackle on a music project, man, the time just flies. Like, man, it's already a month in, you know?
It is. The time is flying. It's amazing.
Nice.
You know, I can't believe I've been here since 1971. It's amazing.
Wow. And, you know, your sound, your chops, man, they're not even near dated, Harvey. I mean, again, man, your chops are still there. And I expect to hear more from you in the future with your new products, man. I can't wait to check them out, so.
Well, we're working on it, and I hope to stay current. When it gets to the point where it's not, I'm out of there. But a big shout out to my buddy Chris Dave there. Is he in Minneapolis? Drumming with
Mint Condition?
Mint Condition.
Yeah, there you go.
Chris Dave.
Oh man, yeah. He got some friends here, man.
He's amazing, Dave, drummer. Yeah.
Man, all the Mint Condition guys are solid drummers, man. Like Stokely, lead singer Stokely, man, he's another solid lead drummer.
Oh, yeah, these guys can play, man.
Yeah.
And they're fresh. They come with different approaches.
All right. It's the Minneapolis sound, man. Love it.
Oh, yeah. Mint Condition, I couldn't think of that, but that's a great band.
Well, Harvey, it's been a pleasure and truly an honor talking to you, man. And, you know, I would love to have you back, talk about your new endeavors, your new projects, your new artists that you're working on. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner.
Well, thank you, Spud. It's great, and I'm glad you liked the new CD, and we'll hook up again anytime. Just give me a call, man.
Sounds good, Harvey. We'll keep in touch, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Spud. Bye to all Minneapolis and the audience there. I'm so happy, and check out the new Foreplay.
Oh, yeah. We got you, man.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And a big shout-out and thank you to Harvey Mason Sr. for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another great show with another industry veteran who's been in the game a long time, knows production, knows composition, really knows how to put things together as a musician. And now they're bringing us another timeless CD titled Let's Touch the Sky. For more information on Harvey Mason Sr. and 4Play, you need to hit their website up at www.4playjazz.com. Again, www.4playjazz.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. Again, www.spud2tight.com. And I also host a podcast on iTunes, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, or a PC or a Mac, go to the iTunes store, type in the Producers Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current reviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the title of the track is called I'll Still Be Loving You, and it's off the new 4Play CD, Let's Touch the Sky. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
In the morning, I'll still be loving you. Be loving you.